Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in.
I have this nightmare, and it was of this creature that came into my room. I was jolted awake. And so I told him about it. I said, hey, I'm dealing with this. How do I address this? And he said, well, Mark, what you want to learn to do is presence love. Presence the true nature of who you are, which is love, which is just a drop into the heart. Think of a newborn child or a puppy or a kitten or a beautiful scene of nature, something that'll resonate the feelings that we associate as that loving essence.
Hi, amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. I'm so excited to be bringing you my guest. His name is Mark Hattis, and we talked a lot about mental health and mental illness, bipolar in particular, and how he was diagnosed pretty late in life, and that he was told there was no cure, and he was heavily medicated, and he didn't like the way it felt. So he searched far and wide for different avenues to take to be able to live with this new disorder that he had. And it's an amazing conversation. And Mark is doing wonderful things in the world. And I just want to dive right into this conversation. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the amazing Mark Hattis. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Thanks, Amanda. Great to see you.
Could you tell us some of your story and what got you to be where you are today?
Yeah, I'll give the quick version. It's kind of fascinating. I was kind of that insecure, awkward kid who went to engineering school and didn't quite think I was good enough to be an engineer and landed in sales, which I was exceptional at. And then ended up starting a company that we built up to about 150 people and 20 million in sales over a dozen years. And it just, there was this sense that there was something else for me in life. It didn't feel like it was as interesting as it once was. And so I departed that. But 9 months after that, I ended up in the psych ward and no previous history of any kind of mental health issues. But there was a week in September of 2011 when strange things were happening. So for 3 years, I was in and out of the hospital, navigating different medications, hit a low in early 2014, and finally fired my doctor and said, you know, if I'm going to get well, I actually need to do something different, because he didn't have a frame of reference for somebody actually getting well from bipolar, which is what I was diagnosed with. So once I fired him, along with my wife, married with 5 children, we found resources that helped heal the gut, get nutrients to the brain. And then I found tools that really helped me navigate some of the things that had occurred during the heights of some of those manic episodes. And for now 7+ years, I've been healthy, off all the medication, and committed to being an advocate, first off, for those who are really struggling. So, you know, once you've been, you know, as you know, with your story, once you've been kind of, you know, through the darkness, you can shine a flashlight for somebody else who's going through it. And so in addition to just being there as a support, you know, we developed a nonprofit that allows for people to get access to a rich educational material on functional and integrative medicine, you know, access to practitioners. You know, there's lots of great things there. Plus, we built some programs that are modeled after some of the tools I used to get well, which was in addition to, you know, the medical support. So that's part of the journey. But the other part that I'll land with and give you an opportunity to jump in here is I gained these gifts coming out of that. I mean, it was really an extraordinary experience. And when I look back, I wouldn't trade it for anything, because I feel so good with who I am. And at the time, I didn't. I felt uncomfortable, insecure, and now I feel very confident. I'm really clear on who I am, how I want to be, and what it is I'd like to do. And one of the things I love doing, I love people, And so, and because of my business background, I really enjoy working with executives and entrepreneurs helping their businesses grow. So as an executive performance coach, I go in and help make sure they're in alignment with themselves, because once they're in alignment with themselves, they're going to be able to make better choices. They're going to have happier lives, you know, more balance, et cetera. And so that's really where I've been focusing a lot of my attention.
Wow, that's one heck of a story there. You know, to live, like, how old were you when you had your first like manic episode that you realized something was going on?
I was 38.
Wow. So you lived all the way till 38, and that's how old I am now, not having any mental health issues at all. Like, you didn't experience, you never saw a therapist. Like, there was just nothing at all going on that would have signified that, you know, you were bipolar before that.
Correct.
Wow. So what transpired, you know, what started happening, like, that you ended up in that first mental institution?
It started where I was doing a lot of introspection, which I hadn't really done a whole lot before. I grew up in a real, you know, Catholic-oriented, go to church on Sundays kind of environment, and always admired, you know, the stories that I'd heard about saints and miracles and things, but never really had anything like that happen to me. But I was fascinated with it. And so along comes 2011, and I started hearing voices. I began feeling energetically, you know, really profound insights through my feeling senses. I had conversations where I would hear in my mind what someone was going to say, and then they'd say it out of their mouth. And then some of the stranger ones, my body started to be moved into yoga positions, you know, involuntarily. My arms would start to be moved and I'd end up in these yoga positions. And then there'd be this energetic crack and almost like a release of energy. And that happened quite a bit during that time. And during one of those, my experience, no one else would have probably seen it, my experience was that a wall moved in support of a particular position that was tough to get into. I know this sounds really wacky, you know, to anyone listening who doesn't have any experience with this, but that's what I was going through. And it led to those things growing, you know, and the manic part of it becoming such that my wife finally said, okay, I've had enough. And she called the paramedics, and they took me away.
Wow. Because, you know, I asked that because my mother is bipolar. So I know, you know, some things that transpire with people who have bipolar, but I don't believe my mother has experienced anything like that. Not that I've witnessed. I know that she struggles with sleep, nightmares, you know, when she's not on her medication. I can tell that she's not on her medication. So mm-hmm. With that, like, when you went to the mental hospital, like, what was that experience like?
I remember it pretty vividly. And that's another thing. A lot of people with bipolar, they don't remember a lot of what they experienced during it. It depends on the person. But I remember it pretty vividly. I remember being in the ER. I was medicated pretty heavily quickly.
Yeah.
And slept, you know, initially, you know, just was knocked out. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I remember groggily waking up. You know, the nurse was asking me to come out, and I came out to the hallway, was walking to explore what was going on, and eventually met some of the people there, and I loved them.
Yeah.
I mean, the patients were really just beautiful human beings, you know, going through what they were going through. And it was a stark contrast to my perception, Amanda, because prior to that, if you asked me the one place I would never, ever, 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 ever want to set foot in, you know, it would be the mental hospital.
Yeah. Scary.
I was just terrified. It was, you know, my memories as a kid, or associations rather, as a kid, were of movie references, mm-hmm. which don't adequately depict what a mental, you know, a behavioral health facility is. I mean, it's way the past ones, you know, think of One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest.
Right. And, yeah. You have all these, like, preconceived notions of what it's actually going to be. And then when you walk in, you're like, oh, like, yeah, some of these people, you know, might like be a little intimidating to talk to. But at the same time, once you do, like, they're just human beings. Like, we're all trying to navigate life. And unfortunately, some of us have these illnesses that we can't control. So it's not their fault. So we shouldn't judge them based on that. But because of society and the way things are depicted, you know, even with incarceration, that's my experience, you know, it's not what you think it is from the outside looking in. You know, then when you get in there, you're like, oh, like, these are just people like me. And we're going through one of the hardest moments of our lives. Nobody wants to be locked up. Nobody wants to experience that loss of self, so to speak. So through that experience, you know, once you get out, like, what was life like, you know, after that first experience of a mental hospital?
Well, it was, returning home was extremely difficult at that time. Mm-hmm. We had never had any experience, you know, in our family or with friends even that were like what I went through. So we didn't have a reference point.
Yeah.
And the one reference point that I go to is the movie Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. If you've seen that,
I may have a long time ago, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, and there's a scene in the movie because he was like this mathematician, yeah, and became in his imagination in his bipolar, his manic episode, schizophrenia. He envisioned, you know, this whole spy ring kind of thing. And it was exciting for him. And after he was medicated and returned home, there was sort of this emptiness, this, you know, just flatness. Like, and there's a scene where he asks his wife in the movie, you know, what is it? What do people do? You know, and she turns to him and says something to the effect of, this is it. This is life. I mean, this is what we do. We take out the garbage, we make the meals, but it was just so empty compared to where he had been. And I experienced a lot of that, you know, where I had been was heavenly and blissful and really, you know, kind of, you know, where I had thought or perceived that spiritual people would land when they were enlightened. Mm. And I was wrong. You know, it was my fantasy of what that was a dark contrast to what actually is true with truly centered, you know, online people, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I could imagine that being kind of a shock, you know, because you go from, you know, you had a quote unquote normal life and then you're immersed in this mental illness that you knew nothing about, but it was kind of, would you say it was scary, exciting? Like, how would you describe what you were feeling in those moments before you actually knew what was happening with you?
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very exciting. Almost like touching in on something I'd known was there, but wanted my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, I could see that. Now, some people with bipolar, they go into deep, dark depression. So it's kind of like you have these massive highs where you're like on top of the world. You know, you think you have like this almost God perspective of the world. You know, you're way up here watching things happen, kind of like the out-of-body experience. But then you have mm-hmm. these like crashing depressions where you're just like, you don't want to get out of bed. You want to end your life. Like, did you experience that side of it at all?
Yeah, not, I mean, and again, kind of like you were saying earlier, the idea of what that is may not actually be exactly how it is. Like you were saying about being incarcerated or me being in the mental hospitals.
Yeah.
So when we say things like this deep dive into darkness, it's going to show up differently for different people. But I would say, yeah, I would sleep till, you know, 11, 12, 1 o'clock and like didn't really have a reason or interest in getting out of bed. Medication didn't support me being as alert either.
Right.
It's very deadening. I felt empty and just shallow and almost absent at times. And so there's always going to be a crash after any kind of major high. And that's true for anybody. I mean, if you've ever been to a great concert great play, and you have that high of like, oh, this is great, and then you kind of come off of that high, you know, that's a mild form of bipolar. You know, where you've got the swings of emotion, and so the higher you go, chances are the quicker you're going to crash, and you're going to crash, you know, pretty hard, and then need to come back into balance.
Yeah. That's very true. I like that comparison because I know I love live concerts. So it is true. Like you are like, wow, like you come out of there, you're so excited and full of energy and you want to keep going. But then reality hits and it's like, oh, it's over. Who knows when I'll get to feel that again? You know, and you go into that kind of not like true depression, but you feel that low, like sad. It's almost like you're grieving it, you know, in a way. Like it's like you want to feel that high. You know, so with these medications, I know from, you know, with my mom and people throughout my life who have been bipolar, you know, that these medications really mess you up. Like, I feel like I'm so grateful that you were able, I can't wait to get to that point in the conversation where you explain that part, but, you know, like people, there's medications that will make you gain like immense amounts of weight. There's ones that like make you literally, like, I remember the first time I was a teenager, and my mother was first diagnosed as bipolar, and they medicated her so heavily that she was no longer her. It was like the weirdest thing. And she'll tell me to this day, like, she like hated that, you know, like she didn't understand why they kept medicating her and not trying to uncover, you know, what was, you know, her feelings. And they were just trying to mask it all to make her quote unquote normal, right? Because people can't, I always say that if you've never lived it, to understand it, we tend to, as society, to judge it and want to just push it away. You know, we don't want to take the time to truly know what's going on inside of a person or their story, because you never know what someone's been through. So with the medication, like, did you experience that too? Like, did you feel like, did you notice it? Or was it almost like you weren't consciously aware that you were being that heavily medicated? I don't know if that question made sense, but
yeah. And of course, anyone who's gone through any kind of issue where they've been medicated, it's oftentimes the first medication isn't going to be the one you stay with. Right. So there's different doses, there's different medications, there's five different categories of medication. And then there's a bunch of them within each category. And so the psychiatrist, you know, does their, you know, best, but they're trying to get to a balance. So yes, I have been in a situation where I was over-medicated, couldn't even walk. Mm. And my wife had to hold me up out of the car to get into the psychiatrist's office to show him like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
And he took one look at me. He's like, yeah, this is wrong. So they changed the whole protocol after that particular incident. And others were more mild, where I didn't notice as much. There was one where I went out and exercised, and I just noticed I would get short of breath so quick. And I was pretty in shape.
Yeah.
But I would get short of breath, and it's like, wait a minute, this is the medication. And because otherwise, there's no explanation other than that.
Yeah.
But there was weight gain. There were lots of different side effects, and people questioned me because I kept wanting to get off the medication. And they're like, why would you do that? Why would you, you know, hey, that's what you need. It's like, it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And since I've become more educated, medication's not a bad thing. You know, and in fact, if I didn't have it, I don't know if I'd be alive right now. I mean, it brought me stability, but it was something that was, it was never going to heal me ever, and it suppresses symptoms. So by suppressing symptoms, then the issues are buried in a way that, you know, aren't necessarily coming to the surface to be able to be addressed. Now, if you don't have tools, which most people aren't taught tools, they're told, take this medication and then see a psychologist or whatever. And a good psychologist is going to give their patient tools. But if someone has tools and they're coming off responsibly from the medication with their doctor, then they'll be able to navigate some of that stuff that looked a little bit crazy before.
Yeah.
you know, or maybe a lot crazy in my case.
Yeah, that's very true because, you know, I suffer from depression, anxiety, and OCD. And I just started going to therapy again. And one thing she said, which I believe there's a place for medication, but for me myself, I won't take it just because of past experiences. But she would tell me, well, you know, like she was kind about it. She's like, I'm not going to force you. She's like, but you're going through something traumatic right now. It could help you be able to deal with that from a non-depressed state of mind, you know, and be able to better handle those emotions. And that's true. So for somebody who, you know, that would could work for them and they didn't have the experiences I did with medication, which were awful. But at the same time, like you said, there is a place for it, but I don't think that it's needed like for the rest of your life, unless there's certain mental illnesses that maybe, yes, I could be wrong. I'm not a psychologist. This is just my own personal opinions, but you know, I don't know, you know, I just don't have that answer, but I do feel that medications can make things, like you said, mask things to the point where you no longer are able to even uncover what's actually going on. Because as human beings, in my opinion and in my experience, like it's our reactions to certain situation that causes us to have manic episodes, be depressed, you know, have racing thoughts, whatever is going on. And if you're just constantly masking it, how are you ever going to heal from it? Because you're never going to be able to realize, oh, this is what's triggering me to do this. And here I have this tool now because of my therapist or whoever you're dealing with, you know, I can handle this now. And it kind of just gradually, like you said, just gradually come off of that into living with the mental illness, but be able to handle the mental illness, if that makes sense.
and when you get to that level, I stop calling it an illness. And I just say, you know what? There's when someone's going through a healing process, I mean, there's a process to go through to start to embrace the things happening within us rather than resist. And the resistance creates more drama and more energy that's actually going to bring out more symptomology. But the going into, you know, with the proper tool set and training is extremely, so it's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
That I know. And we have lots of resources around that I've talked to. I'm not a doctor, so I can't say it from that standpoint, but we have a podcast called On Your Mind, On Your Mind, hosted by Dr. Timothy J. Hayes. And he's a PsyD. And we've got 70, 80 episodes of nice practitioners that are incredible. And there was a recent one with a functional medicine psychologist or psychiatrist, and her 14-year-old son had gone through a serious mental health challenge. And they told him the same thing they told me, you know, you'll never get well, take these meds. And she started on a protocol that said, well, maybe there's something different. And they found lots of dietary adjustments, you know, exercise, you know, just fundamental core things. And he got healthy. It took 2 years.
Yeah.
Because he was eating kind of she called it white food diet, you know, with lots of sugars and flours and pastas and things. And it just, hard to sustain a highly vital system with that kind of diet. It's just not going to happen. So he had to make changes. But most psychiatrists today that are in kind of the mainstream world, they're not looking at those things as richly as kind of an integrative or functional medicine doctor is going to, where they're going to look at a more balanced approach, including medicine, but not just medicine.
Yeah, that's very true. I work at an outpatient mental health practice. And I remember, as my boss, she's a psychologist, so sometimes I dump some of my problems on her, you know. And, you know, one of the things she said, which I never knew this, is that our gut health is directly linked to our mental health. So if your gut's not healthy, your mind is also not going to be healthy. And I was like, what? You know, like I never heard that before. And it's true.
So true.
Because if I'm eating, like I have an eating disorder. So sometimes I'll starve myself throughout the day. And when I'm doing that, when I'm in that mindset, I'm more depressed. But then when my husband goes like, please, like you have to eat something throughout the day, you know? And then I'll start to come out of it. It's like this instant like switch. And I'm like, oh, like I'm feeling better. I'm hydrating myself. I'm doing these things because our body, like, I don't know what happens. I don't know the science behind it, but there's something with that. You know, it's all connected. And in order to be, you know, healthy, we have to be all around healthy, you know, and right. masking our pain with medication or, you know, shoving it aside like it doesn't exist. You know, I tend to do that too. Like, oh, I'm fine. I have racing thoughts and I don't sleep, but it's cool, you know, because we don't want to admit to ourselves that something is wrong. And then it just increasingly gets worse over time. And then it's harder to kind of, you know, switch that off and be able to do the use those tools and resources to be better. There's so many out there, like you said, that we don't have to be heavily medicated to get through life. No, there are.
No, in fact, on the racing thoughts thing you mentioned at the end there, one of the things that worked for me, I learned to cancel my goals every day. You know, so at the end of the day, cancel all conscious and unconscious goals. Mm. And then your mind can actually rest. And you can plan for the next day. You can put, you know, some goals that you want to frame for tomorrow or something. But to shift from the brain constantly trying to solve everything, because that's why your mind's racing, to releasing that and getting a good night's sleep. You know, it's refreshing. Now, when stress comes up, you know, I've had a couple of stressful days with a situation, you know, that's been going on, and my sleep hasn't been as good. And so I kind of will breathe. And I'll check in like, hey, is this best for me? And yes was the answer. And so it's not a constant thing, but when I am up and it's the quiet of the night and I can be at peace rather than feeling like, oh, I've got to get back to bed, by checking in and realizing, oh, this is actually good for me, you know, then it allows me just to be present with what that energy is. And it worked. You know, it helped me get to a really clear spot today and, you know, address the situation effectively.
I like that idea, you know, because I was smoking medical marijuana for my anxiety and PTSD, and it helped me so much. But then I started to notice that I was running to it. I was masking what was actually going on in a time where I really needed to be present. I was like, I'll just stop. You know, I'm good on that. And then the nightmares start coming back and the racing thoughts are coming back. And it's like, but you're right. Like, if we can, you know, I like that for the sleep part because sleep is hard for me. So, you know, sitting there and thinking, okay, like I'm up, and instead of being like, oh, I need to get to sleep. What time is it? And just like, okay, like I'm up for a reason, you know, like I need to figure this out instead of stressing myself out even more to the point where, you know, I feel guilty because I'm not asleep, which is ridiculous, you know, when you think about it. So.
Right. And a simple statement there, Amanda, would be, I'm awake right now because, and just say that sentence and then let the words come out. Mm. Right. I'm awake right now because, and it's a great self-awareness tool, because whatever comes out of your mouth probably was buried under some of the emotion. Right. Right. But now once it comes out in the open, it's almost like bringing something that's hidden in the darkness out in the light. And now you can address it.
Yeah, that's true. Now, speaking of dreams and nightmares, since you have bipolar, do you experience bad, vivid nightmares at all through your experience?
So I'll share. I had horrible nightmares prior to my whole healing.
Yeah.
And I would say I have zero nightmares now.
Wow.
And a big part of that is, and in fact, can I share a quick story? This is great, actually.
Good.
I was down in Florida at a workshop with Dr. Michael Rice. He taught this. He teaches this program called "Why Is This Happening to Me Again?" Mm. And I have this nightmare, and it was of this creature that came into my room, and I was jolted awake and didn't really feel comfortable going back to sleep. I was a grown man, right? I think I was probably 39 years old at the time, but it was frightening. And so I told him about it. I said, hey, I'm dealing with this. How do I address this? And he said, well, Mark, what you want to learn to do is presence love. Presence, the true nature of who you are, which is love. Mm. And so he taught me how to do that, which is just to drop into the heart, kind of think of a newborn child or a puppy or a kitten or a beautiful scene of nature, something that'll resonate the feelings that we associate as that loving essence, right? Yeah. And if you were to hold, most people, if they're going to hold a newborn child, look in their eyes, that resonates love. And so you can do that with a picture or a memory or whatever it is. Or again, if kids aren't your thing, kittens and puppies are always really good for a lot of people. Because they just like, oh, yeah. There's so much joy there, right? For a lot of people. So by getting to that energetic state, he said, then bring up in your mind's eye the memory of the dream. And I did. So I sat down, I presenced that pure energy of love, and I allowed for that creature to come back, and I saw it, and it was there. And instead of running away and opening my eyes, I breathed, I felt whatever was coming up, and I just presenced that love. And instead of not knowing what happened next, the thing just changed right in front of me in terms of its shape. It's almost like the creature changed shapes and then eventually ran and left.
Wow.
And I felt so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds silly. It sounds silly to people who may have never done it, but I felt powerful. It's like, wait a minute. I was running from that thing that in the presence of love scurried away. And that led to me being free of fear. Mm. Because whether I was walking in a forest at night and was hearing noise like, oh, what's that? What's that? Which I was kind of a skittish person at the time. I would just pause and breathe and enjoy the darkness of the forest and presence love. And like, and it was almost as if there was a transformation that appeared to happen out there, but it was happening in me.
Wow. That, you know, I have not heard that one before. And, you know, I'm very fearful. Ask anybody, you can scare me with like the easiest, simple scare. I'll be jumping out of my skin, right? I don't like darkness at all. I can't sleep in the dark. If I have to like use the restroom in the middle of the night and I hear something, I won't get up, you know, and I'll just lay there and like this still like stiff. And I think, oh, for some reason in my mind, if I don't move, the monsters won't know I'm here. You know, and I'm a grown woman too. You know, like I always feel silly. You know, like what is wrong with me? Like I'm an adult. Like why can't I just go to sleep and not have these vivid, insane nightmares where people are chasing me or my family's going to get murdered or whatever my mind conjures up? And I love that because if we can, you know, what would you say, hold love? Is that how you express that?
You are the presence of love truly. And so it's connecting with that,
yeah.
It's kind of connecting with that true nature of who we are. And the baby kitten puppy helps us remember.
Yeah. I like that.
And resonates it.
Yeah. I'm going to try that. Honestly, that is amazing because a lot of times, like, you know, we both said like we're grown ass people. Like, why are we so scared to go to sleep of all things, you know, but that's a true fear. And I think a lot of adults experience that. I think that, you know, we're definitely not alone. You know, if me and you, we met what one other time, you know, we have that same experience. I'm sure others do too. And that's a powerful exercise to try because I love that you said like going out into the woods and dark, like that would be like a big no for me. But if I could just stay in the present, because, you know, I think a lot of us tend to project like, oh, well, what if? Oh, there was, you know, what if that was a big grizzly bear? Or, you know, I mean, your mind's just like firing off all these what ifs to produce that fear that stops us from doing things that we really want to do. I would love to be able to go out in the woods. It sounds amazing and freeing and beautiful to experience that without the fear. You know, fear keeps us stuck.
Well, I need an update after you practice it a little bit and see what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
But one of the things that happened with my dreams is instead of waking up when the scary part of the dream, yeah. I was able to become then present in the dream.
Lucid dreaming.
And then the dream changed.
Yes, lucid.
It really is.
That is another thing that I've tried. I took this whole course on lucid dreaming. I thought, okay, this is going to help me out so much. But I, you know, didn't ever do any of the exercises. But one thing that they said that I have tried is You'll know you're in a dream if your hands look weird. So if you're in a dream and you notice your hands, then you're like, I'm dreaming. And then you can kind of control it more. And they said too, to like ask, you know, people in your dream questions and like have like these lucid conversations within your dreams to try and interpret what's actually going on. Because 9 times out of 10, from my experience, dreams are our subconscious mind sending us like signs of some sort, you know what I mean? And I like dreams a lot. I could talk about them forever, but anytime I wake up from a dream, I'm on my phone. Like, what does that mean? You know, like, why did I dream of that? But it's true, you know, they're, and not a bad dream doesn't necessarily mean something bad either. You know, that's what I've learned through my experience, but they're scary. You know, when you wake up shaking and crying and sweating, like that's, you went through something traumatic in your dreams, you know, and that's a hard thing to wrap your head around, especially in that moment, because you're just scared and you don't want to go back to sleep because you really don't want to relive that, you know, even though it's this made up story in our minds. I don't know how we got on this tangent, but it's a good one. probably me. But so after all these experiences, you know, you said you were in the mental institutions, you were, you know, navigating medications. Like, what was the final breaking point where you were just like, you know what, like, I'm done with this? And how did you start to find the resources and things to help you not be so heavily medicated?
There are two significant moments. One, I was actually giving a TEDx talk in Naperville here back in on 11/11/11.
Wow, cool. That,
kind of a cool day to do it. And I had practiced so much. I hadn't done a lot of public speaking, and our marketing guy at the time had been a thespian and said I had to memorize it. I'm like, okay, so I'm memorizing. I really nailed it, had it. So I get up there and I start delivering my talk, and I have an out-of-body experience, literally. I my consciousness moved to the side of stage. I was watching my body give the talk.
Wow.
But when I was on the side of stage, I couldn't hear what the body was saying. So I asked the question, like, how's this possible? And then boom, I was back in my body. And I had lost place. I didn't know where I was in the talk. So it's on YouTube and it's not a very good talk. And they tried to edit it. But because the whole time I'm talking, I'm wondering what just happened.
Yeah.
And if I were me today with my maturity, I'd probably say, you wouldn't believe what just happened. I'm going to interrupt this, what I was going to say. and kind of go with exploring that a little bit with the audience. I mean, it was such an interesting experience in hindsight, but I was embarrassed because I had practiced and I had, I don't know, 10, 15 people in the audience that had come just to see me out of 250 or so. And so I, shortly after that, prayed and I said, hey God, if there's a way to heal this, show me the way. Mm. And my hand was actually lifted off of my lap, almost like somebody lifted it, but from within. Mm. So it like lifted off my lap, grabbed a book at the side of my bed. I had about a dozen books. And I grabbed this one book and opened to this particular page. And it was a story of of Teresa of Avila. And she was a 16th century saint who, in that particular page that I was reading, described situations that I experienced, not exactly, but very, very resonant with what I had experienced prior to going to the hospital. And that whole TEDx talk was just 6 weeks after I got out of the hospital the first time.
Wow.
So it was early. And when I saw that, I thought, you know what? If this woman, you know, could go through what she went through, and she's a saint, I think I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
And so there was sort of that confirmation. A second thing that happened was with Dr. Michael Rice. He had a book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I read it. And I just reached out and said, hey, I'm going through something. Can I talk to you? And I was surprised when he called me back, honestly. But when he called back, I shared it with him and he said, oh, you know, I've seen that before. Like it wasn't a surprise. Like all the doctors that I had talked to prior to that and other people, it seemed like this awful thing, right? That I'll never get over. And here was the first man who said, I've seen this before. I've seen people go through it. And when they have the tools, they can navigate it and get to another side, get to kind of a restored, healthy state. And I started probably crying on the phone. I don't remember exactly, but it was just this release of, okay, I have hope.
Yeah.
Right. So what the doctors are telling me may not be the full story. That said, still took me quite a bit of time because my wife was scared. I was still quite scared. My recurring thoughts were not healthy,
yeah.
You know, kind thoughts. And so in 2014, 3 years, 2.5 years later, I guess, early 2014, I was in the hospital. And I kept hearing this voice and these images. And I would see these images play out of different timelines, you know, and it's all in my mind, of course, yeah. But I'm seeing these different timelines and I would make different decisions. You know, those old books where you pick your adventure, choose your own adventure
book?
Yeah, I
know what you're talking about.
So I would make a decision and then see how it played out.
Wow.
And all these things, I'm going to exaggerate a little bit, but it felt like hundreds of them.
Yeah.
So after quite a bit of time, wide awake in the hospital, 2 a.m, I realized every outcome to me was bad. Mm. Like they were all somebody got killed or I killed myself or it was just like, but it was mostly somebody else got killed. And so that was my low and I attempted to take my life in the hospital there and thankfully didn't work and I'm here. But it was then when I lived, I thought, okay, if I'm going to live, I'm done listening to people who don't believe I can get well. I'm going to find people who believe what I believe.
Yeah. Wow. I don't even have words for that. But I'm very grateful that you're still here to be able to share your story and help other people. You know, so after that happened and you had that like epiphany, so to speak, you went to... Did you go back to that doctor that wrote the book? I'm sorry, his name escapes me right now, but
Michael Rice. No, he's not a medical doctor. He's a naturopath and a PhD.
Oh, okay.
But he he's not the doctor that I left. He was someone who was introducing me to the concept of hope.
Right.
And hey, there are tools out there that you know could really support my inner journey.
Yeah.
And yes, I spent a lot of time with him. Learn those tools, and actually, with him blessing it, we brought those tools out into a program we call Optimal Being, which teaches these core fundamental tools. And they're not for people necessarily who are going through a mental health crisis.
Right.
They're for any human being. And so we've been bringing them into the corporate environment. Wow. To allow for people to learn just core skills that honestly could be taught in first through third, fourth grade, but they're not.
Right.
You know, and so people go into adulthood without fundamental tools that could actually help them navigate life so much easier to their own purpose and passion and happiness and well-being.
That's amazing. And, you know, do you still take medications or are you off medication?
No, I've been off medications going on, I think it's 7 years now.
Wow. And you're able to live... would you say it's comparable to how you lived prior to your bipolar diagnosis, or is it different still?
It would be better than before. Mm. You know, so it's not that I went back to, 'cause before I had a lot of insecurity and anxiety. Okay. That's all gone.
Wow.
Or I shouldn't say all, but it's mostly gone.
Right.
In my regular life. So, yeah, there's a level of clarity of thought, you know, that, and confidence, you know, in terms of what I do and when to take action and when not to. And just there's a confidence, whereas before I would have worried about a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm pretty much present. And if I'm not present, I become aware that I'm not present. And then the only thing for me to do is use the tools to get back to presence. rather than pretense or, you know, being off. And so I've learned that, like, that's it. Like, don't take an action from fear. It always turns out negative.
Sure does.
Don't take any action or speak when you're feeling hostility. It'll always be destructive. And so the only time to really act, speak, or you know, engage in the world would be when we're in that pure state of aligned presence. And I think that's the core of a lot of what's going on in our world is people don't do that.
No, they
you
don't.
Know, a lot of people make, you know, quick reactive decisions from wounds of the past. And you do that as an individual, it affects a lot of people, but you do it as a group and it affects that many more people. You do it as a country, it's going to affect that many more people. And so we have an opportunity to really address a lot of the woes of life's woes by teaching people how to be present.
Yeah, being present is so important. I was just talking about this the other day, but, you know, being self-aware, right? And realizing that the only person that you can control in this world is yourself. And you have to be able to, like you said, don't make choices based on fear. Don't make, you know, decisions when you're feeling angry or frustrated. You know, you have to get those emotions out. I think it's healthy to, if you are frustrated, to have an outlet for that frustration, but don't let that outlet be another human being, you know?
And that's just it. Emotional intelligence is something that's real popular and it's critical. A lot of us were taught through action to suppress our emotional states.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't okay to cry or to be angry with certain types of people or to whatever it was. And so we were feeling fear. Like, what are you afraid of? There's nothing to fear. Those are all suppression techniques that train kids like, oh, it's not okay. And so they shut off a massive intelligence system, which is their emotional body. And so a big part of, you know, someone, you know, coming into a healing process is to allow that to become more active and all the emotions become okay and free to be fully felt. And when they're free to be fully felt, they're actually felt subtly, which is the odd thing.
Yeah.
Right? They're felt subtly, and the fear of what would happen if you fully let your anger express, you know, is actually an untruth when anger is truly allowed to express, because it looks gentle when it's truly allowed to express freely. But it's the repression of the anger, the missed expectations, and it grows and grows and grows and grows and then pops. And it often pops on self or somebody else, or possibly physical object,
right?
But there's this explosive energy, and that's the destructive pop of something that could have been really easily addressed, you know, had someone noticed it sooner and been willing to feel it. But by repressing it, you don't notice it until it's so strong. It's like,
well,
that's where you're going to get your nightmares, by the way, is repressed fear.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think, you know, repressed emotions are, you know, that's a huge issue for all of us, because I know, like, it was instilled in me as a child, you know, don't cry, or you're making it all up in your head, or, you know, why are you so angry? And then you start to just think, oh, it's like a subconscious thing. You don't consciously necessarily think these things, but it's ingrained in you. And then you start suppressing, and then all of a sudden you're flipping out, you're quitting a job because, you know, one thing happened that day, and you're all these choices that you make out of anger or fear, you know, that definitely have negative effects. You know, if you have open conversations with people and express how you're feeling in a safe way, then things can be solved. And it doesn't have to be this huge negative explosion. Like you said, it doesn't have to be that.
Right on.
So. Oh, well, Mark, could you tell our listeners, you know, where could they find you if they wanted to learn more about what you're doing in the world?
Yeah, so there are a couple locations. If you go to my name.com, markhattis.com, you can get access to these. But you can get access there to journeysdream.org, which is a mental health resource. You can get access to optimalbeing.live, which is a program I had mentioned earlier. And I also have a number of books out there that you can get access through the markhattis.com. There's a children's book called It, which is fun to write. And my illustrator was at the time, I think she was 19 at the time,
wow.
You know, pretty young woman who did a phenomenal job with it. Got a new book that came out recently under a pen name called Prisoner of War. Mm. And that's my first novel. And it is unfortunately really close to home with some of the things that we see happening in the world.
Wow.
And then I've got a couple of business books. One's called Awakening Your Optimal Leader. And the other one that's coming out soon is called Awakening Your Optimal Workforce, which covers the 10 elements of well-being. So that'll be out, I think, on the somewhere in March here, you know, somewhere soon. I won't give the exact date just in case we miss, but
awesome.
Pretty soon.
That's great. So my last question for you, Mark, is the question I ask everyone. And what would be your number one tip for our listeners to allow the good things into their lives?
Yeah, I love that question. And the thing that is most critical is to understand where you can connect. And so if that's a walk in nature, if that's being near water, if that's talking to a friend, you know what those things are, and maybe even keep a list of them and act on them. You know, take care of yourself. So if you know that connecting with the true nature of you is to go for a 5-mile run, you know, that needs to be a priority in your life, you know, or just go, you know, sit by a stream, then that needs to be a priority in your life, or journal, or, you know, whatever it is. Everyone's going to have their things, but know what yours are and make it a priority in your day.
That's a wonderful tip. Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing your story and for being here on the show, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show. And I will talk to you all soon.